Don't you worry about a thing. Jesus Christ is still the King.
Welcome to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr on Iowa Catholic Radio. Every Wednesday, diving deep in the truth of the Catholic Church and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from the Mercy Live Up Studio.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Dr. Bud Marr.
We are coming to you from various parts of the globe. Bo Bonner, Des Moines, Iowa, Mercy Live Up Studio. Bud is in Pittsburgh, where instead of rain, it is snow. And is the sun gloriously illuminating off of the snow there, Bud, or is it still snowing?
It's gray. Gray skies.
So that's what connects us all, everyone, is the grayness. The grayness at the heart of things. Well, I'm here. Go ahead.
I almost lost a child because of the snow last night. Like, I had one of those dad moments where something looked good on paper, but I told my daughters to, I would stand at the bottom of the hill, like a bowling pin, and they could try to knock me over. Well, in my mind, I thought, there's no chance they'll steer towards me. So Claire flies by me on the right side, and I'm like, haha, that was funny. I look up, and Madeline's hurtling towards me at like 30 miles per hour. And despite being terribly out of shape, I managed to leap over her body. But then I heard like this crash through the brush, and we were close enough to like this forest area, and Madeline just, it was like a Calvin and Hobbes scene. Just went, I don't know how she's alive, but she's with us. So.
Well, we're not streaming live from a hospital. We're coming live from Mercy Live Up Studio, 1150 AM, 88.5 FM, 94.5 FM, streaming live, iowacatholicradio.com. And if Madeline was in the hospital, Bud, if you had the Iowa Catholic Radio app, you could listen to the show, even if your child gets injured in sledding accidents.
Oh, I bet our show is perfect for the hospital bed.
It's so insane.
You know, it's funny. A few weeks ago, I think I mentioned that a friend of ours listens to the podcast when he's mowing the lawn.
Uh-huh.
Well, I referenced that, and he's like, hey, I was mentioned on the show yesterday. He thought it was pretty cool and said, I was raking the leaves this time. So
he really actually heard.
We're appropriate for yard work as well.
Yard work, hospitals, we just have it all, folks. As always, we're brought to you by Cartridge World. I saw Joe on Friday, Bud. We had our December 8th gathering, you know, our big meal in honor of, of course, the Immaculate Conception, but then also 11 years of programming. So I asked Joe if he didn't mind how we kept cooking up ideas about how you could use Cartridge World, most of them revolving around sports and stuff like that. And he said he thought it was great. So, it's always nice to hear from a sponsor that they don't think you're sinking their ship. So Cartridge World still behind us, Bud. They re-upped. We're a positive influence in Cartridge World's life, and they underwrite our show, and we're very thankful.
Oh, man, I really wish I could have made it back for the dinner and talked to Joe because, oddly enough, Nebraska's playing Kansas this Saturday. Like, we re-upped the rivalry.
Oh, wow.
We used to, I mean, they regularly just trashed us in basketball. We get them back in football.
Right.
But I don't know. Kansas is a little bit thinner this year. I think they're still, like, top five team, but it's at the Vault, as we call Pinnacle Bank Arena.
Oh, wow.
And I'm smelling upset. So if we pull that off, I'll have to call and talk trash to Joe without burning our sponsorship.
That's right, like the delicate balance. Also, as always, brought to you by Mercy College of Health Sciences. It is finals week. There are exhausted students. But with that, there's also people sending emails and telling you notes and telling you how wonderful the 15 weeks have been. I don't know. You know, usually week 15 is pretty stressful for everyone. I still have a lot to grade. But I've also heard wonderful comments from students, and you know, you really do see that there's things that we're changing lives at Mercy College, and it's wonderful to get to help these students through their journey.
Yeah, you probably remember Sarah from one of our servant leadership courses. She would bring her mom in, who is a midwife and has done work in Haiti with pregnant mothers. She reached out to me yesterday asking for a recommendation letter, and that was a nice email because I got an update on her life, but it's really nice to write letters for students who are like, oh yeah, this is going to be easy to write. So
yeah, exactly. Not someone who's like, really? You didn't show up to class. You want me to recommend you? So, but we don't have a lot of those students. Good students. No. And as always, you can start in spring. You don't have to wait till fall. You can start summer as well. If you have any recommendations for us, 515-223-1150, text into that number and it will show up on our magic text screen. And hopefully we can answer the question, unless it's too pointed or if it's about Jeb's personal life. Jeb has said that is off limits. No prying into the life of Jeb. Otherwise, 515-223-1150. Bud, myself, and Deacon Tony are open books. But Jeb still has a lot of his life in front of him, so we want to preserve that. So 515-223-1150 for texts.
You're the king of the segue, man. I feel like I could bring up anything, and you could find a way to segue to the text messaging board.
You know why that's been made easier is by the invention of segues, bud, because eventually you can talk about segues. They're ridiculous, and I think they relate to nearly anything else. What we have today for you, everyone, we have Eve Tushnet on. Eve Tushnet is one of the more prolific writers and one of the best contemporary writers that has been out there on the Catholic interwebs. She's written for American Conservative, The Atlantic, First Things, Washington Post, Weekly Standard, New York Times, Commonweal, all across the board. Her most recent book is a novel called Amends. She's probably most well-known for writing a book, Gay and Catholic, by Ave Maria Press, where she talks about how gay Catholics can love and be loved while adhering to church teaching. She is a very unique, almost singular voice in that regard. And, of course, she has been getting asked to speak at a lot of places precisely about that issue. Kind of connected to that issue, she's really a pro on Christian understandings of friendship throughout the ages, that the concept within Christianity is a much larger, more meaningful, deep idea. And we're going to talk about that understanding of friendship, especially here during the holidays, where people really associate the holidays with family, but also with loneliness. And so we'll get to hear from Eve talk about that, bud.
Oh, it sounds great. I've been following Eve's work, but I haven't got to talk to her personally, so I'm really looking forward to it.
So stick around. We'll be back in a minute with The Uncommon Good with Eve Tushnet.
Thank you, R&R Realty Group, for underwriting Dowling 365. R&R Realty Group has been accommodating business expansions and real estate solutions since 1985, solving commercial real estate needs by establishing long-term relationships built on trust.
Support for programming of Catholic Women Now partially provided by Farm Bureau agent Cindy Schulte. Cindy Schulte on the web at cindyschulte.com, 515-226-2111. Cindy and her team know health insurance.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Here's your forecast on Iowa Catholic Radio. We've got a wind advisory in effect for this afternoon for gusts up to 45 miles per hour. Temperature will be dropping to the upper 30s by late afternoon and mostly cloudy. It'll be cloudy and windy tonight. Low drops down to 22. Mostly cloudy and cool on Thursday, 34. The weather is brought to you by Divine Treasures Catholic Book and Gift Store, celebrating 25 years of service to the greater Des Moines community. I'm meteorologist Steve Hamilton on Iowa Catholic Radio.
We're back with The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Marr. We are talking today with Eve Tushnet. Eve is a prolific writer. She has written all over the place on various subjects. The American Conservative, The Atlantic, First Things, Washington Post, Weekly Standard, New York Times, and Commonweal. She has two books out. Amends, a Novel, is her most recent book. She also has written Gay and Catholic from Ave Maria Press, a book that, as she said, she was the most unlikeliest of converts, but then talks about her conversion to the Catholic faith and how it is that gay Catholics can love and be loved while adhering to church teaching. She's a speaker, speaks at many places, and you can also read her work on her website. Eve, how are you doing today?
Good, good. How are you all?
We're all dealing with different types of weather. Bud's in Pittsburgh enjoying the snow. Here in Des Moines, we're blowing away. What's it like out on the East Coast?
It's cold. It's probably not as cold as where you are. It feels cold to me.
Yeah, and that's what matters, is if you feel like you're going to die because of the cold. So, well, Bud and I were just talking before the break. We've been reading you for a while, have loved your work, and glad to get to finally talk to you, especially here on the radio for everyone out there listening. You have taken a special interest in talking about the spiritual and theological contours of friendship in the Catholic and Christian tradition. And I was thinking that, especially this time of year, you know, the secular media, marketing, movies, they really equate Christmas with family, maybe a certain type of family. But then we also hear from sociologists that this time of year can be one of the most loneliness, that people feel the most fractured and fragmented. I'm wondering if there's an interplay, Eve, that we can talk about this, the more robust understanding of friendship in the church's tradition, answering this sort of loneliness and fragmentary feelings that people are feeling at this type of year.
Yeah, no, I think those are directly related. You know, the kind of central focus on just the nuclear family and the decline of the extended family and friendship and all the other ties and connections that used to support, you know, parents raising children has made it very much harder for people who aren't in that nuclear family, but even for people who are. Parents are more stressed. They have fewer people to turn to and rely on. It's very hard on marriages, you know, when you don't have good, close, devoted, lifelong friendships. And that's been something that's, you know, that I've seen in my own life, that I've been very blessed to be able to have friendships with married people and to kind of be there for them. And obviously it's fun for me. I get to be the aunt and to have the best parts of seeing your children. And then when I'm done with your children, I can give them back to you. But, you know, it's really clear to me that families exist in almost like an ecosystem. And we've really neglected for more than a century now the friendships that used to be such a deep and beautiful and fruitful part of that Christian ecosystem. And unsurprisingly, families are also suffering because of it.
Eve, this is Bud Maher. Thanks for being on. In an article that you wrote for the Washington Post, you talked about how our culture tends to idolize couplehood. And this seems to me one area where maybe the church has capitulated too easily to cultural trends. Could you talk some about, in that article you talk about how Christianity has always had kind of like this healthy tension with the temptation to idolize couplehood or romance?
Yeah, well, so you can even see it in Scripture, right? Obviously, Scripture uses the marital love of a man and a woman as one image of how God loves us and how we can love God. That's in the Old Testament, in the Song of Songs, in the Prophets, you know, with God's faithfulness, even when Israel is the unfaithful bride. That's in the New Testament. But the thing is that there's also, in Scripture, same-sex friendship, same-sex love, used to show us how God loves us and how we can love God. David and Jonathan are sort of the most obvious Old Testament example of this. Their devotion to each other, which they solidify with promises, when they exchange their armor, this is like a classic ancient world way of making a promise or a vow of friendship to one another. And the sacrifices that Jonathan makes for David, following the will of God, are so intense and extraordinary. He sacrifices his physical safety, his relationship with his father, his social position as a prince, and all for love of God, expressed through love of his friend David, which is why in the Middle Ages, St. Aelred, who was an abbot and philosopher of friendship, used David and Jonathan as kind of prefiguring the sacrificial love of Jesus, because Jesus himself uses the image of friendship to teach us what it means to love God and to love others. There's this line that we've heard so many times that we kind of don't notice anymore how countercultural it is, where Jesus says, "Greater love has no man than this, to lay down his life for his friends." And we've heard this so many times. But if you were to ask sort of a normal person on the street today, what is the greatest love? Like, if you were to say the greatest love of all is to lay down your life for blank, I think a lot of people would say your child. Some people might say your spouse. Some people might say your mom. But Jesus, you know, does not have, like, a sort of normal, like, child or woman that he can say, well, I'll lay my life down for my wife. But he doesn't even say his mom. He instead uses this image of friendship to say that this relationship, too, can be so sacrificial, so complete, so devoted that it could structure your whole life and teach you what it means to love God. That kind, and to be loved by a God who actually died on the cross for us. So that kind of, like, extraordinary sacrificial friendship is something that is very hard to find nowadays, but used to be a much more normal part of Christian societies. You can find, stretching back millennia, from, as I say in scripture, to up until the 19th century, you could still find, and even in some places the 20th century, people who would make vows of friendship, who would share their lives with their friend, who would share their finances, their household. Friends would care for one another's children, and these were publicly acknowledged and honored friendships. There were rituals where you could have made promises to take in someone as a sister or a brother and make them part of your family. Godparenthood was often used as a way of making your friends a part of your spiritual family. And there's some persistence of these things today, but much less when it used to be a much more normal part of the social landscape. And something that, in my opinion, was beautiful, healthy, fruitful for everyone in society.
This is the I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if I can just throw out sort of one other thing that goes along with this, is that marriage is clearly an important, good, beautiful Christian vocation. It's a sacrament. But if we look again, both at Scripture and at Christian history, you see deep honor for celibacy, for a life that is lived without a sexual romantic relationship, giving yourself completely to God. That's been something that nowadays I think we can only see as a form of isolation or deprivation, but that's not how the New Testament or Jesus himself, who died a virgin, presents it. Celibacy is something beautiful in itself and fruitful for the whole community through prayer and through the devotion and service of celibate people. So I think that's another piece of the puzzle. You lose vocations to friendship, to godparenthood, and to community life when you lose honor and respect for celibate life.
This is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. We're speaking with Eve Tushnet. If you have a question for the show, you can text us at 515-223-1150, 515-223-1150. We'll get that text and try to answer it on the show. Eve, you gave such a good rundown of all of that. And one of the things that's difficult for people is, I mean, church history is vast. There's so much that we're trying to teach people. But this seems to be something that flies completely under the radar. Even when I... And Bud and I have taught this in our classes when we taught together. If you teach something like Aristotle talking about the three friendships, right? Use, pleasure, and virtue friendship, you start to see in the students' eyes this clear recognition that what they've always meant by friend is the pleasurable ones, right? So use friendship, they understand, is like, okay, acquaintances. I begin to know the cashier at my coffee shop because why do we need to be rude to each other if we're going to see each other every day? But yeah, I'm not going to lay down my life for the cashier. So what you start to understand is what they mean by friendship is, well, I like being around this person. We go do the same things together. But in many ways, friendship has become, we like the same type of entertainment. But when you talk about virtue friendship, that you can't grow in virtue unless you see it mirrored in someone else, it's almost one of the most revolutionary things they've heard, because friendships are almost always seen as an accessory instead of a necessity. And if they are seen as a necessity, it's always like, well, someone's there to, you know, a shoulder to cry on or to make me feel better. And it's not that those things are bad, but this next step you're talking about, like seeing myself in someone else or seeing myself being willing to lay down my life or just any of my central goods for a friend. I'm teaching 20 somethings, and sometimes they act like they've never heard that concept before. I wonder if you run into similar sort of, just lacking, that people don't sort of have the language to talk about friendship the way that you do.
Oh, yeah. Well, people desperately want that language and that understanding. Once you give it to them, lots of people respond to it and say, wait, you know, that's beautiful. That's what I really would long for. But it's totally true. You know, one of the central books on this subject is a history book called The Friend by Alan Bray, and he's looking at the history of English friendship from about 900 to 1900. And he himself was shocked to find things like friends who would be buried together and would have beautiful sort of descriptions of their love for one another written, and sometimes depictions carved of like a heart with them holding hands, you know, on their graves to show these were people whose love shaped their entire life to their death and even after death. Since they would often promise to, if your friend died before you did, you would take in his children and also have masses said for him. So this was a form of love that could persist even beyond the death of one of the friends, that in prayer and in caretaking, you actually become a part of their family. And that's something that sometimes we see even today. My grandmother she had a friend who I think may have been a cousin, but was definitely her best friend. And when my grandfather died, this friend came to live with my grandmother, lived with her until my grandmother's death. And after my grandmother died, her friend, who was also very old, was taken care of by my aunt. So her best friend's children, were the ones who ended up taking care of her. That's something that, you know, people desperately need practical caretaking. And then for Christians, right, there's also a spiritual dimension of us becoming one another's spiritual family, being able to care for one another in prayer and to be sanctified, to be drawn closer to God by the love that we show each other, the care we give each other, the sacrifices we make for each other.
Eve, just as a side note before I ask my next question, as a historical theologian, I can attest to a lot of what you're saying. My own area of interest is in the life of Blessed John Henry Newman, and he had a very close friendship with Ambrose St. John, a fellow Oratorian, and when Ambrose died, there's accounts of Newman, weeping at his bedside throughout the night or whatnot, and he was later buried with Ambrose. Well, of course, in recent years, there's been renewed this sort of interest in like trying to discern Newman's orientation or things like this. And it really attests to this idea that you're saying, where it's almost difficult for us to imagine very close friendships that aren't erotic. Like our culture almost kind of reads that into those sorts of situations. Back to another point that jumped out to me from your Washington Post article was you talk about economic factors, and I don't think as Christians, we've necessarily done good reflection on that, where even the way that our society is structured economically and socially, that can make it difficult to have these meaningful, deep friendships.
Yeah, no, I mean, everything from health insurance to who's on your lease to sort of deeper kind of almost cultural economic factors. Like, one thing that comes up a lot when I talk to people who are trying to build lives shaped by friendship is, do I move? Where if one of us needs to get a job somewhere, does it make sense for me to move to be with my friend or to ask them to move to be with me? This is especially difficult for people whose closest friendships are with married people. It's difficult to take more adults with you when everybody has to get a job to make the household work. So there's a lot of just you are, if you're living in the if your closest relationships are not married and not are neither spouse nor children, those relationships are not going to be recognized by your employer. If you have to take leave, for example, to care for your friend, that's not going to be covered by family and medical leave. There's a lot of just basic practical ways in which your the fact that these relationships are unrecognized makes life much harder. I don't know that it needs to be this way. I think that those things probably will not change until a lot of people are already leading lives of sacrificial friendship and people can see what the practical needs really are. But I guess it's just something that people find as they try to lead lives shaped by friendship. And really any lay celibate life is going to run into these questions of economic challenges that come from having the relationships that you are sacrificing for be kind of invisible to both the law and your employer and the wider society.
Well, and this is an area where it seems to me where when we talk about spiritual friendship and the way that you're pressing people to think about, it's not simply a matter of like personal subjective happiness, but this really is part of the witness of the church where, I don't know, like if you watch a little bit of television, you get the sense that we can kind of construct our identities by buying the right products. And it's ironic that a lot of the products we buy have I at the front of them, you know, but part of the church's hospitality throughout history has been welcoming the stranger. And I think if we're able to model these kind of relationships, that's really, I mean, it's in a sense providing, you know, it's reaching a thirst that I think the world has and maybe doesn't even recognize it at this point.
Yeah.
I think part of it too starts to be when you talk about the economics of making any great change. I was thinking of when I was in college in Stillwater, Oklahoma, the one law that everybody knew is that you could only have three adults per lease. You know, and part of it is, I sort of understand, you get too many college students in a house, they can trash the place pretty fast. But what a weird artificial distinction to make in a place where everybody knows lots of people are probably going to live together. But, you know, there was a lot of economic incentive to make a law like that. You don't want loads of people living together in a house. You don't want people sharing resources. You want everybody having to buy one of their own thing or live in their own place. And so it's like you said, you know, the chicken and the egg here is that there has to be more people demanding it before there will start to be, you know, change in that regard. Okay, well, we're going to go to a break now. So we'll be back in a few minutes with The Uncommon Good. This is Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr. We're talking with Eve Tushnet. Stick around.
Support for programming of Catholic Women Now partially provided by Farm Bureau agent Cindy Schulte. Cindy Schulte on the web at cindyschulte.com, 515-226-2111. Cindy and her team know health insurance.
Hi, this is Tony Calumet, Executive Director at Iowa Catholic Radio. On behalf of myself and all of our staff at Iowa Catholic Radio, I want to wish everyone a very blessed Advent. Our hope for Christmas begins. Our year-end appeal is happening right now with letters mailed, and I want to thank you for your generosity in response to this appeal. We are hoping to raise an additional $45,000 on top of our goal of $50,000 to address the much-needed updates in our programming department and cost with our current tower. Please know that we are very grateful for every amount that you send to us. No amount is too small. As our Iowa Catholic Radio family, you are in our prayers each day. May God richly bless you and your loved ones.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts. 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Last year, 150, or 150 students, gained essential employment skills and graduated from computer classes through Catholic Charities Hispanic Community Outreach. With your help, we are making a difference, but the need continues. Learn more at CatholicCharitiesDM.org.
We're back with the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher speaking with Eve Tushnet. Eve, do we got you back on the phone?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about all that.
Yes,
I think part of that, it's just the robots. Bud can tell you, one of my themes is worrying about robots. And sometimes with robots, obviously they do amazing things. They help us, for instance, talk to people in multiple time zones all on a radio show. I wonder if you think, Eve, that technology plays a role in this sort of stratification and the sort of diminution of friendship. And I know it's easy to like pick on Facebook or something like this, but if we're talking about a millennia, has there been 100 years of technology having that sort of pressure that makes talking about friendship this way more difficult?
Well, it's hard to say, right? Mobility does make sustaining lifelong relationships harder in general, and that's a technological change. But the more people move around during their lifetime, the harder it is to keep your friends with you as you move. On the other hand, I can only speak from kind of my position as this teeny tiny minority of gay people who accept the Christian sexual ethic. Facebook's been great for us.
Right.
The internet has been a fantastic way to find other people who are trying to lead unusual lives of Christian service. When I became Catholic, I didn't even know of anyone else who was openly gay and who wanted to try to live in accordance with church teaching. Now, if you go on, you can go on Google, right, and put in, I'm Catholic and I think I might be gay. And you'll find people who are actually trying to do that. So if you're in a particularly weird or difficult situation and you don't have a lot of people in your area who you can reach out to, the internet is actually fantastic, a big help. It obviously comes with a lot of downsides. I think social media can make people depressed, right?
Right.
But I don't want to, It also does some good for people who are really isolated.
Well, and I mean, to be quite frank, it's the internet that I've been reading you and have said, this would be a perfect person to come on the radio show. So I make fun of robots all the time and they're going to get me and everything like this. But there's this way in which if we're going to talk about marshaling the sort of resources to stand against a dominant cultural pattern, where else will you hear it? I think one of the things for me is it's less the technology. Like, I don't think having technology per se does this. The thing I've noticed, and maybe you can tell me how this has worked out in your life, what I start to see a lot is people, we have all this technology, we can connect over time, different time zones, but instead of like now people having all sorts of type of friends, I find more and more people who are raised, alongside with and only really friends with people from their own social group. So, I grew up we never had an issue with, money or anything like this, but we were raised around people who were. We knew poor people. We knew rich people. We knew a lot of different people different than us and just realized that, that's part of the slice of life and, you interact with different people. We teach a class here at Mercy, and sometimes students have never met a homeless person, have never met anyone poor enough to need to go to a soup kitchen. And of course, they're not wrong or bad. They haven't actively ignored this, but it's become easy to do it. And so I wonder if that's actually the worry. It's not so much the robots themselves, but the sort of occasion that they lend us to act in certain ways.
Yeah. Well, the more choice, right, that you have, because of your basic human nature, we usually use our choices to kind of self-segregate with people who are easier for us to handle. And the people who are harder for us to understand or handle, or the people that we don't already feel comfortable with, if you can get away from those people, most people choose to get away and to be with those they already feel comfortable with. And that's, I mean, you know, part of the very radical nature of Christianity, which you can see in the lives of so many of the saints, is them choosing to go to people who were vastly different from themselves. And to both share the gospel and also, like, learn from and be changed by the people that they went to. I think that that's really, you can even see it to some extent in entertainment. I've seen a few commentaries that both television and movies are less likely to show people from lower economic, like low income and even lower middle class backgrounds than in the 1980s and early 90s. I don't know if that's completely true. It anecdotally, I feel like I have seen that change. People are richer in the media and more isolated from people who don't have as much.
Yeah, Eve, you talked about sort of the promise and perils of technology and how they affect our friendships. As someone who came into the church later in life and with the unique contours of your spiritual journey, how have you found parish life in terms of facilitating friendships? Like, what have been sort of like some of the difficulties and some of the real joys in parish life for you?
Oh, man. So I'm the worst person to ask because I don't do church stuff. I'm the bad person that when everybody says Catholic churches aren't friendly and don't welcome strangers, yeah. I am that person who isn't friendly and doesn't welcome you. I prefer to, like, lurk and go and, like, go to Mass and receive
That's
communion
great.
And go on home, which I realize, like, you know, there are ways in which that's very hard on your spiritual life. I do one church thing, which is I'm on the steering committee of the gay and lesbian ministry at my church. And I may be joining something else, but basically I am not a joiner and I'm not a welcomer. And so most of my friends are friends who don't go to my church. That said, I've talked to a lot of people, and especially, again, because of the work that I do, it's been mostly gay people, LGBT people, who have talked about how amazing it is when they do find a church who can welcome them wherever they're at, who can actually take the time to listen and to ask what their needs are and to find, you know, to find it actually, like, pleasant, pleasurable, fun, joyful, spiritually fruitful, to help them in their walk with God. It doesn't have to be a big, like, heavy challenge. It can be, isn't it wonderful to get to know a person who has been shut out from the church and the body of Christ for much of their life and now and wants to be a part of it? Isn't it, like, actually our privilege and blessing to be able to find out how we can walk with them? And there have been, you know, I think the more... There have been people who have been able to find churches that were really willing to support their friendships, to support celibate partnerships that they were in. And it's been a real challenge, I think. If you're trying to live in a way that churches have kind of forgotten about, that's challenging in itself. And if you add to it this, like, bizarrely culturally inflamed situation where it seems like everything about being gay, you know, many Christians will view, unfortunately, as being purely about sex. So, like, I've had people assume that my best friend was, like, that I was in a lesbian relationship with her. Like, you know, I am a lesbian. I'm actually capable of having non-romantic, non-sexual friendships with other women. But that viewpoint where any same-sex love expressed by a gay person is viewed as sexual and suspicious, I think keeps a lot of churches from being really supportive of the friendships and love and relationships that their gay members need. So that's, again, all from my one perspective. I don't know how this affects people trying to maintain, you know, people who are married or straight or whatever, trying to maintain friendships in the church. But from my perspective, you know, I I think it's wildly varied, and you're less likely to get support for your friendships and your other relationships if you are gay, which is awful, right? Because, like, we need it. We need some kind of love.
Yeah, this is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr, speaking with Eve Tushnet. I think one of the things that you that have been circling around is when it comes to how we are understanding what makes a community and why we would be part of one, there's a way in which the church, and not the church, maybe the members of the church, start to mimic what the outside culture looks and tries to make being Catholic its own sort of deal, but a choice among many others. And what I mean by that is you start to look for parishes where you think people like you will be. And it's like you said, it's not that that's necessarily the most awful thing in the world. We do kind of, we want to go find people who have similar interest, right? Like I'm actually, you're talking about being a bad example of like being a welcomer. I'm a bad person of talking about not wanting to talk about things, because I will talk to anyone about any boring thing because I'm a boring person. Like one time someone talked to me for 3 hours about making keys, and my wife was like, well, what'd you guys talk about? And I said, oh, we talked about making keys. And she said, what else? And I was like, nope, just keys for 3 hours. My wife said, I would have died. And I was like, I thought it was fantastic. So, but my point is, I've talked to other people, like you're saying, and there's this impulse, right? You don't want to go be around people that are going to make you nervous, that are make you uncomfortable. And I think Bud can attest to this as one of my lifelong friends. I have something wrong with me where I like uncomfortable situations. So again, wrong person to ask. But I think that what you're saying about when we talk about the church and what Christ has called us to do, it is something radical. I always think about my granddad who lived in the trailer parks of Enid, Oklahoma, who said that you don't choose dogs. He would only get strays. And he said, he said, God chooses which dog you have. And that worked out sometimes. And other times that meant the family dog was absolutely bonkers. But I sometimes wonder if that's, that that's what we need to be by friends. There's a way in which you need good friends that you want to imitate and be like. But then there's also ways in which God plants friends in your life and it's not immediately obvious why. But are we faithful enough to see what 5 to 10 years with this crazy person would benefit in our life? And sometimes I think people don't have that sort of patience or faith. I don't know. I'm rambling now. I turn it back over to you.
No, I mean, I think that if we do start taking friendship more seriously, that will become an increasingly important question. If you look at what ancient and medieval writers said about friendship, they spend an enormous amount of time on choosing the right friend. And that's because they expected you to have this friend for the rest of your life and make sacrifices for them. So it's, and you know, for the Middle Ages, you know, you would often share your finances and your household and the care of your children with a friend. So this is someone you really want to think hard about. Is this person really going to be that friend for me? And this would be, you know, one person who would be your friend throughout your life. So some of the discussion sounds a little, in some ways, closer to thinking about choosing a spouse. I have never done that. I've taken more of the, I talk about this in my book, there's an anecdote from the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous when I think it was Bill W. I may get these people backward, but I think it was Bill W. who went to a hospital and said, I want to find the worst alcoholic here. Who's that guy? And that turned out to be, and the nurses found for him, the guy who turned out to be Dr. Bob, the other co-founder of AA. That's been a little closer to how I've made friends, just sort of like, why don't you find me the messed up one, or the one that I can have, like, catastrophic adventures with. And we'll see if we can make it work over the lifetime. I've been very lucky with that, but there have been times when I've wished that we had a better understanding of choosing friends, because people have such deep needs, and it is really hard to even know how to have that conversation about, you have a need for friendship, but I don't think I'm that friend for you. I don't think I actually can be the sacrificial, devoted, lifelong friend that you genuinely need. We're able, I think, somewhat better to have that conversation around romantic and marital relationships. You can say, like, marriage is good and beautiful, and I really hope you find that person, but I'm going to say no when you propose to me. But we don't have a good way of kind of letting people down gently or even just having a conversation about what the structure of friendship should look like.
Well, it's because, right, we think of friends as, it's like friendship is just this measure of, do you like me and am I a likable person? There's no idea about,
right,
are we good for each other? No, this is a great point because there are friends I have that share no claims theologically, philosophically with me that people go, why are you friends with this person? And I'm like, we're obviously good for each other. We get on each other's nerves, but we're good for each other. And then I can think of a few people where on paper there's all this match, but I'm like, you know, they're not, they, you know, their ears and my mouth are not what God has in mind, right? Like there's, and it's what would be best for them is probably not another dose of Bo Bonner. And I'm okay with that, right? Like that doesn't have to mean that I'm diminished. I'm just, you know, I'm the wrong sort of, thing for some people. And, man, that's hard for people to get though, Eve, I think. Because people think every relationship they have is sort of like, in the end, like a trial about am I a worthy person or not, instead of are we better together or not.
Eve, earlier you mentioned that, that book by St. Alred, Spiritual Friendship.
Yes.
I'm actually unfamiliar. Is that would you call that an accessible work or like what's could you give us a brief synopsis? It sounds like you found that one really helpful.
Yeah. So it's short. It is short. It's, dialogues. It's a series of three dialogues, which Elred writes. He's a character in it. And so are some of his monks. Funny little story about this. One of the monks is Walter. And Walter is like the difficult monk who is constantly trying to get more of Elred's attention and who's kind of jealous of Elred. And Walter is a real person who ended up writing Elred's hagiography after he died.
Oh.
And he brags about it. He's like, by the way, remember Spiritual Friendship? I'm that Walter. Which, like, I don't know. Like, is that prideful or is that really humble? You know?
That's awesome. Sorry. I'm so laughing, like, at that one.
So it's a very human book. I think you really feel all the different characters as real people who lived in this monastery. And Elred had a reputation for being just incredibly tender and loving toward his monks and was utterly beloved by them. And you can really feel that this is someone who cares so deeply about the souls of these men in his care. It's also about mourning a friend. His closest friend, Ivo, dies in between, I think, the first and the second dialogue, maybe the second and the third. And so you really feel that loss that Elred is really grieving his friend, and that's part of why he's writing these dialogues, as a way to honor and to kind of almost to have their relationship bear fruit, to have their friendship bear fruit for generations to come by the writing of this philosophical work. It's there'll be stuff in it that's weird for modern readers. Some of the stuff about choosing a friend, like I mentioned, rings very strangely, and in some respects might not be right. But there's a lot that is relevant to us today and very challenging. There's a beautiful several-page exegesis of the story of Jonathan and David and their lives and their friendship, where he's explicitly mirroring Jonathan and Jesus. That, I think, is close to the heart of the book. I do think it's readable. I think if you're going to read a book by a philosopher monk, it's probably one of the more accessible.
Yeah, do not read Mirror of Charity by him. That book is very hard.
Right.
Yeah. So, we're getting ready to get here to the end of the show. And, you know, I think there's lots of books people can read. There's a lot of resources that we can point people to. Certainly, you write about this subject quite a bit. But in a practical way, If the water we're swimming in is difficult to imagine friendship as love, that to me is always where I find a hard, you know, time telling people who maybe aren't as bookish as I am, you know, where do they go look for these things? And of course, if you know someone personally, like in your local community, you point to them. The only thing that I'm thinking of here at the end, Eve, is I know that you write about movies a lot. You just wrote about one of the ones that I've been telling everyone to watch, Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. And beyond all of the, like, do we both agree with how good the movie is or not, what I would say is that movie, unlike many, shows very different people who don't like each other, but then weirdly, in maybe some sort of peripheral ways, obtuse ways, start to show this weird love for each other that's not just because, like, you and I agree, we're all the same sort of person. It's weirder than that, and grace is a stranger thing than that. Would you say that maybe that might be, that there's movies out there, maybe that might be where people can see some of these sort of friendships that are like more like what we're getting at, where people can go see that for themselves?
Yeah, I mean, if I were to say, like, where are the places that we see it? Family history, sometimes, like I mentioned with my grandmother. Children's books. Children are still allowed to have friends.
Right, that's,
you know,
a good point.
And yeah, as you say, there are some movies. The one that I would point to, and I'm not necessarily recommending this for a Catholic audience because it's pretty darn vulgar, but Bridesmaids, the Judd Apatow, Kristen Wiig movie.
Oh, yeah.
Is, despite the name, not really about marriage. It's much more about the friendship, about not only the central friendship between the bride and her bridesmaid, but other friendships also play a role in actually making people kind of wake up to their selfishness and get outside themselves. That's sort of an unexpected one. I think it comes out here and there, you know, because people long for it so much.
Yeah, no, I think that you're right. There's always sorts of movies where I'm all like, well, I don't know if I can recommend them full bore, but like if you're talking about a particular point, another one that always pops to mind to me is movies that sort of like show the antithesis of this, people who aren't good friends but are trying to figure it out. So I think of like the Coen brothers version of True Grit, or, you know, the Royal Tenenbaums. There's all these movies where people are just horrible friends, but then by the end, through some circumstance, they start to realize like, oh, if we don't actually care for each other, who's going to? And what does family mean and things like this? So, you know, I think that there's places, there's sparks. And when we see that, you're right, people latch onto it, but maybe sometimes they don't know how to... It's almost like we've not given the language for people to elucidate when they even find it.
You know, there's a lot of dumb reasons that superhero team-up movies are so popular, but one reason that I've heard people talk about is that it's a place where you can find what they call a found family. People who come together out of need for one another and actually make sacrifices for each other and bond without marriage, romance, you know, tying them together just because they have a task to do together, like the classic Aristotelian Friends.
Oh, man, I think that's great. Now I'm trying to think which Avenger I am and which Avenger Bud is, but that might be an entire other show that we can bog down the readers with. Well, Eve, it's been fantastic. I've appreciated coming on to talk about this because I, like you said, it's a topic that flies so under the radar, and people, you can tell that they feel it, that this is a problem, but it's really hard for them to bring up this idea about how do we have a Christian understanding of friendship. And like I said, it's been an honor to have you on the show and talk about these things. If you don't mind, what are some places that people can read your work online and learn more about these topics?
Yeah, probably the easiest way is to do a search for my name, which is Eve, like Adam and Eve, and then T-U-S-H-N-E-T. But let me see if I can get you my website address. I never remember it myself.
That's no problem.
Okay, what is it? It's www.patheos.com. So that's P-A-T-H-E-O-S. /blogs/EveTushnet. So EveTushnet. Again, it's probably easier just to Google my name, but that's where all my writing is collected.
Fantastic. Yeah. When you have a good, distinguished, distinct name like Eve Tushnet, there's not going to be a lot of other Google pull-ups. Like Bo Bonner gets like a few dogs when you put in Google. So I think you've been spared that by having your name. So, well, Eve, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it. And I know it's cold, so bundle up, and I hope you have a good rest of Advent.
You too. Take care. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you. Well, Bud, I'm really interested now about which Avenger you think I am.
No, I was really intrigued by that final observation she made. And my mind went from Avengers to an old movie, Mystery Men. I think it came out when we were in college.
Oh, yeah.
But that film really is about misfits in the eyes of the world who find this community because all they sort of have is each other. And I was thinking, man, we need to pursue that line, maybe have your brother Bobby come on the show and talk about comic books. I was trying to think of our comic book expert.
That's right. No, he is the town comic book expert. I suppose I'd be Mr. Anger from that. Would you be the guy who the Pharaoh who just said things that didn't make sense, right? No, I'm kidding. That's mean.
Yeah, that's probably true. I know I wouldn't be Ben Stiller's character is just the guy that gets angry. You're saying that's you?
Yeah, that's me. Yeah. You can be the person who has the bowling ball that has the skull of their dad in it. That's pretty cool.
I might be William H. Macy. I forget his superpower, but he was sort of...
low-key.
Cerebral. Yeah. I don't know.
We are talking about a movie I am guaranteeing you very few people have seen.
Yeah,
so.
this reaches
well,
back.
Yeah, well... we're getting ready to end here, so to throw in a few things, make sure at 5 a.m. you can hear the Bible in a Year every morning. Listen to the Rosary at 9:30. If you appreciate what's going on here, despite the fact that Bud and I are blabbering on about superheroes, please make sure we're a nonprofit. We would love for you to be a part of our ministry by donating to the entire radio station. This is The Uncommon Good. Bud, thanks for joining us. I hope you survive Snowmageddon out there in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Advent blessings to all of our listeners.
Okay, this is The Uncommon Good. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our hearts and our families with our friends, the city, state, the entire nation, the world. This is The Uncommon Good. We will see you next week. God bless everybody.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard Wednesdays at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. on Iowa Catholic Radio and on the official Iowa Catholic Radio app.